Okay. Mm-hmm. Great. They're bringing in the chairs. So, you know what? Just tell them to pile it in back. If anyone will come in, they'll take the chairs. Okay? Thanks. Thanks, Danny. Okay, fine. That's it. That's it. Okay, thanks, Danny. Okay, today is Monday, the 30th of January, 2012. And I again want to say hello to those sitting in front of me and to the many who are listening across the great universe that we are part of. Today is the Shloshim for my mother, Yehudit Bats Reb David, Jenny Rothkoff, Harini Kaparat Mishkava Leha Shalom. And I want to devote this year today to a hesped for my mother and a siyum in Masechet Chulin, Be'ezrat HaNatein Le'yov Koach. The hesped I'm going to give is based upon the few words I could say at the funeral. Some of you may recall, unfortunately, the way life works, people are dying to get into the cemeteries. And right before I got up, Lahaspid at Ima, the Chever Kaddish came over to me and told me, we have a funeral in 25 minutes. So you got the message. And I want to elaborate and to pay homage. I have to say also, in what I'm elaborating upon is a result of the many letters of condolences I received from around the world from people I do not personally know, but people who know me very well as what they call virtual Talmidim. And these are people also who I saw have studied my latest book, and they made some interesting comments that I will relate to. We speak about the Isha HaShunamit, when she saw Elisha coming by time after time, and she understood Vayhi Hayom Vayava Elisha El Shunem Vishem Isha Gedola. And in this locality there was what the Nach calls a great woman, an insightful woman. And on my mother's monument, the first word that appears is Isha Gedola, a reference to the Shunamit. And she understood right away that this was a great man. You look into the Mefarshim, you look into the Metzudat, so he explains very beautifully that women, Bina Yetera Benashim, women have, the Gemara need, the women have much greater insight, and other people would see Elisha go by, and they wouldn't pay attention. But she deciphered that he is a great individual. And she turns to her husband, and she makes this beautiful plan. Na'asena aliyat kir katana v'nasim lo sham mita v'shulchan v'kisei u'menorah v'haya b'varo eleinu yasur shama. And whenever Elisha will come by, let him come, let him stay with us, let's make him comfortable, let's prepare a hotel room for him, call it what you wish, a mother-daughter apartment for him. And it's very fascinating. Look what she prepares for him. Mita v'shulchan, a bed, a table, a chair, a menorah. And when you look at these four items very carefully, you see that she is concerned with both his physical needs and his spiritual needs. There's no question that the mita, representing a place to sleep, the shulchan, a place to eat, no question that that represents material needs. The second half, kisei, menorah, here we already find spirituality. The kisei, v'shafti b'beit Hashem li'orech yamim, and the menorah, of course, represents Torah, or the menorah in the Mishkan, in the Beit HaMikdash. This is the ultimate symbol of spirituality. And this intelligent woman prepared for Elisha a place where he could lodge, and both his spiritual and physical needs would be taken care of. And I want to say about the generation which I was raised, my mother, along with many other mothers that I knew, I interacted with, my classmates, they ran the house. They took care of the physical, they took care of the spiritual. Women didn't work at that time. It's very different than today. And all of us hadn't come, and all our fathers did would go to work, bring home a paycheck, everything else, it was our mothers. Our fathers were practically guests in the house, I would say. It was our mothers who were the heart of the house, who, in the words of the prophet, prepared the mitar, the shulchan, the kisei, the menorah. Now, many of the letters I received, particularly from those who I do not know and had read Washington, they all hit upon a very salient point. And I've spoken about this many times in different contexts, have much different Torah from the Rav. Ein lecha adam she'ein lo sha'ah. And it might be when Chazal tell us every person has a moment in life, could very well be that this refers to the ultimate moment where you make a crucial decision which influences your entire being, your entire existence, to a certain degree, your entire eternity. And sometimes we have to make very big decisions. Halavai we could be prophets. Halavai we could be clairvoyant. The Gemara in Tamid, Daf Lamed Bet Omer Aleph, famous Agada, Alexander Hamokdan, when he comes to the Ziknei HaNekev and he asks them all these magnificent, penetrating, philosophical questions. And one of the questions, Ezehu Chacham, who is wise? Haroeh et hanolad, someone who can discern the future. And of course, all of us would be very wise if we could only discern the future. So many decisions we have to make in life, and we're not clairvoyant, we're not prophets. We make these decisions. I hope we're right. Sometimes we're wrong. And I have to say that many people hit the nail on the head, and I was very moved by their penetrating insight that my mother made one decision in the early 40s. And that decision, seemingly a small decision, not earth-shaking, and that decision ultimately changes so many lives, her own, everyone around her, and I don't want to be arrogant to say tens of thousands, but I have to say that in the messages I got from across the world, time and again, that phrase came back, a decision that affected thousands, well nigh tens of thousands of people until today. And that decision goes back to the early 40s. And here I want to elaborate a little and introduce you to a world that you only know by reading memoir literature. It's not the world that you grew up in. It's not the world that exists today, by and large. My mother was born in Harlem. My father was born in Harlem. My mother was one of six children. Six children. Her parents. As I've mentioned many times, my grandmother came from one of the finest families in Kovna. Through my grandmother, I relate to Gedolei Yisrael, including Rabbi Dov Revel, including the Chevron of Rosh Yeshiva, Rabbi Aaron Cohn, the son-in-law of the Levush Mordechai. Today it's his grandson, I believe, who's Chevron of Rosh Yeshiva. What a family. Memoir literature about Kovna talks about this family. My mother always told me how her grandfather, in other words, her mother's father, who was an architect and a builder and quite successful, how he turned down a tremendous offer to build a church because they wanted him to work on Shabbos. The worker should work. He doesn't have to be there. But they were in a rush. And he absolutely refused because of the Chilul Shabbos. And this was not a simple matter. The church was powerful. Pressure. My grandfather, the man she married, these teenage kids came to America 112, 113 years ago. The man she married came from a fine Vilna family. My grandfather always used to tell me, "Gedenkst mein Enkel, I say this from Vilna, remember, this is for you, Yosef Chaim, remember my grandson, your grandfather is from Vilna." And my grandfather actually learned in the Luzhin when it reopened in 1895, I don't want to go into details now, I lectured on this years ago, but the Luzhin that had been shut down by the government in 1892 reopened in 1895, and it was no longer the prime yeshiva or the premier yeshiva. There were many yeshivas already by 1895. Mir was on the map. Slabatka was on the map. Telz was coming into, was on the map. But it was a Russian yeshiva. And my grandfather could quote Gemaras by heart. I can still remember, he said the Yenukta, he could quote Gemaras by heart. And here they were, Holland, made a little money. The Bronx, and their whole Yiddishkeit was a world chetzi eved, chetzi ben chorin. My grandmother's home was kosher, but when did my grandparents go to shul? Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, maybe a few other times a year. And this was the home in which my mother was raised, six children. And today, in retrospect, my mother went to the Olam HaEmet at the age of 98. It's a family blessed with long life. Her elder sister died at 98. She still has two sisters in their 90s, a brother who's rapidly approaching 90. And my mother left more direct descendants, great-grandchildren. I'm not talking about the fifth generation. They're great-great-grandchildren. She left more direct descendants than all her siblings put together times four. And it's all a result of one decision that she made. I'm sitting here. My brothers, their families. I have a nephew, a Rosh Yeshiva, a Reish Metifta. He was in Eilat many years. He taught children of students that I inspired, the Kamen Aliyah, were his students in the Hesder Yeshiva in Eilat. My brother has a son-in-law who's a Rosh Kolel of post-army, post-Hesder, post-army Kolelim. It's a new concept. It's all over the country today. Ravin Sipori, who's written already four Sfarim with a fifth coming out that'll be dedicated to my parents' memory, is my brother's son-in-law. And all this is a result of one decision that my mother made. And of course, you all know what the decision is, but I want to elaborate on what you don't know. I went to public school. It was a time you wanted to Americanize. Everyone had the American dream, America, World War II, Roosevelt. I grew up in a home where Roosevelt's picture hung on the wall. Today when we mention Roosevelt's name, we say, Yimach Shmo V'Zichro. How many millions of Jews is he directly responsible for their meeting their death in the Holocaust? And it was a time, America, you know, the immigrants, and they were overwhelmed, and the freedom of America, and there's no czar, and there's democracy, and their elections. And my mother, like everyone else, who heard of yeshiva? What yeshiva? Where were they yeshiva throughout the whole United States? If you read Washington, I think there were four day schools in New York, which I mentioned, And you had one in Baltimore, and I think that was it. I don't think there was anything else yet. All right, it was already the late 30s. It was beginning already. Boston, you had Maimonides was beginning. How did you have all, by 19, why did you have all of 20 students in Maimonides? All of 30 students with the whole Maimonides put together? And here I go to public school that first year, and you know, I was a Jewish kid. The neighborhood was a third Jewish, a third Irish, a third Italian, basically Roman Catholic. Irish and Italians, very, very different. Irish drunk all the time, beat their wives. The Italians like Jews. It was amazing. Family values, don't drink. They could be mafia by day, but they respected their wives by night. It was an amazing concept. They had Jewish values, family, children, to a certain degree education, and we were very, very much at home. But in public school, you know, I learned quickly. I had time on my hands. I beat up the teacher. They would send for my mother. And finally, the teacher says to my mother, and the teacher was Jewish. She was of Spanish-Portuguese origins. And the teacher says to my mother, you know, public school is no place for a kid like yours. He learns too quickly. Send him to a parochial day school, a yeshiva, and it'll occupy his mind with the yeshiva education and English education. And min ha-shamayim, I mean, I have no way, how else can I explain it? Min ha-shamayim zachiti, that the only yeshiva parochial school, as it was called. Today they called it a day school. Then we used to call it a yeshiva katana, yeshiva parochial school. The only one that existed in the Bronx was five little blocks from my house. So here's my mother, born and bred in the United States. At the most, a concept of Yiddishkeit which she had and warmly embraced, but it was that concept. We tried to keep kosher, everyone worked on Shabbat. My parents did have some social activities and were connected to the Young Israel of the Bronx, but it was a nebulous concept. And here the teacher is telling my mother, take your son out of the American dream and put him into a yeshiva katana. And now I want to say something that some of you don't understand, but those of us who learned with the Rav understand it very well. If anyone would ask me, and people always ask me questions, who were the Rav's top Talmidim? I always get that question all the time. By now you know my answer. I've given it in the Kollel, and I give an answer. Whether right or wrong is unimportant, but it's an intelligent guess. I always say outside of the 50s, there's no question that Baruch Lichtenstein was his top Talmud in the 50s. But when I talk about the 40s, arguably, I think Rav Tzvi Harold Kanatopsky was his top Talmud. I may be wrong here, but arguably, out of the 60s, arguably, Reb Heschel Schechter, arguably, out of the 70s, my Talmud, Reb Chaim Milson, could be, you can argue with me, but it's a decent insight on my part, the names I've just mentioned. So I want to ask you a different question. What do you think the Rav would consider his greatest achievement? Okay? Now, Michael the wise man, I want you to think about this. I don't want you to answer me now. You think, well, what would be the Rav's greatest achievement in life? Okay? Netanel, think for 1 minute. I'll tell you what I think the Rav considered his greatest achievement. The school that Rabbi Yitzchak Rubin graduated from. Elementary and high school, Maimonides. And Yitzchak, you with me? And see, Yitzchak and I are both on the same wavelength right now. Nechemia, here we are agreeing 100%. And Nechemia, you know what the Rav used to say about Maimonides? Quote, I paraphrase him. You don't understand how difficult it was to organize Maimonides. Even the Shomer Shabbos Jews, the few that were in Boston, were opposed. Maimonides, who wants a day school? Un-American. America, you come, the melting pot. This was the key word. You Americanize. Star-Spangled Banner. God bless this country. Thanksgiving Day. The greatest gift of America. Re-education. And you're going to take a kid, an American-born kid, and you're going to put him in a yeshiva. You're going to turn him into a greenhorn. They use the word, it's a derogative word, a maki. Have you ever heard that word? You don't even know that word anymore. It's a derogative word, a maki. What does a maki mean? I don't even know. A greenhorn, a Johnny come lately, a stupid kid. You understand? He doesn't know what America's about. He doesn't know baseball. The from Jews themselves were poor. You think it was only in Boston? A book just came out, a coffee table book. It's a magnificent book. Daniel, I was waiting for you. Sit here. There are chairs right here. Okay. A coffee table book just came out by Geffen, by a dentist named Lander. Moshe, there's a place right next to a Talmud of mine out of the 60s. So let it be said, a Talmud out of the 2010s is sitting next to a Talmud out of the 1960s. A coffee table book, a beautiful book, a dentist in New Jersey named Lander, if I'm not mistaken, L-A-N-D-A. It's a book that, if you're interested in a beautiful book, art, a book put out in Israel on the highest level, it's like Joey is sitting here, Ofik put out the Rambam, remember I told you about the Rambam, the manuscript on Hilchot, on the first two volumes. It's on Sefer Mada and Sefer Ahava. What's it called? What's the manuscript called? But what's it called? Who owned it? Who was the... before, the count who owned it, that gave it the name. We got to think of it. Okay, we'll get there. All those names I know that you mentioned, but I want the original name. Anyway, what's the name? Huntington, the Huntington Manuscript, correct. So the Huntington Manuscript was put out, people saw it, they couldn't believe it was put out in Israel. The level was international. Cambridge, England, London couldn't do a better job. This book, Lander, is a... if there are not enough chairs, there are chairs in back, so right behind you. Lander is a dentist, but very few people in life are happy with what they're doing. Rakefer is one of the biggest exceptions you'll ever meet, that someone who's been a Rebbe for 53 years and only wants to be a Rebbe and turn down every offer to make a living, to have an important title, to have prestige, a Rebbe. Most people, doctors want to be rabbis want to be doctors, dentists want to be professors want to be dentists. This dentist, Landau, wants to be a photographer. And he went through the United States photographing many different Orthodox communities and recording their history. I couldn't believe it, where he talks about these communities and they finally want to build a day school. And he's quoting what's going on in the communities. You might as well quote the Rav. In every community, St. Louis and Cincinnati, and right down the line where they want to build a day school, the Frum Jews say, many of them say, Chas v'chalila, it's un-American, it's anti-American. And you have to understand, my mother faced a tremendous dilemma. It wasn't a small decision. It was a decision going against the very grain of how she grew up and where she went to school and the environment. And she took her eldest son, Arnie, and by the way, one of the great losses of my mother's death is that there's no one who calls me Arnie today. And it hurts. Every morning I used to visit my mother and Arnie, good morning, how are you, what's new, etc. And this hurts. Because to be called Ani is a schut, and it's a Ramban in Pashit. And we just read Pashit Bo, HaChodesh Hazel Lachem Roz Chadashim. No, what Chodesh are we in today? Shvat. We just finished Tevet, Kislev. Goyish names, idol worship. If Yosef Chaim would mention these words in context, if he grew up in the Mela, they'd smack his face. So the Ramban asked, why don't we give beautiful Hebrew name? We have beautiful Hebrew. Chodesh Siv. Give a Hebrew name. And the Ramban says, you have to remember where you came from. This is extremely important. And there was nothing greater that for 74 years I had the schut that my mother called me Ani every morning. It's a big decision, not a simple decision. But my mother had Hashgacha Pratet. Ezehu Chacham Harareh Et HaNolad. And this opened a whole new world for her children, for my parents, and of course, everything that happens afterwards is only continuity of a decision to take a youngster out of public school and put him into a parochial day school in the early 40s. And what did we learn? What did we learn? And there's a beautiful Gemara in Baba Kama, Gemara that I quoted to you, but I didn't quote this part of the Gemara. Daf Tzadi Zayin Amid Bet. Remember I quoted to you a Gemara, Ezehu Matbeyah Shel Yerushalayim, a few weeks ago. It's not ancient history. That Gemara continues. Ezeh Matbeyah Shel Avraham Avinu. And the Gemara tells us, Zakein v'skeinu mitzad echad, ubachur ubetula mitzad acher. What a fabulous Gemara. What is the coin of Avraham Avinu? On one side of the coin, you have two elderly people, an old man and an old woman. And on the other side of the coin, a young boy and a young girl. Now, what does it mean? What are we talking about here? But there's a profound message here. This is the message that the Western world does not comprehend, that Obama does not start to understand, that Clinton has stumped over it. This is the message that is the antithesis of the New York Times, of Haaretz. We are concerned with the past and the future. The presence is the least of our concerns. The Western world lives in the present. Wine, women, song. How does the prophet put it? Eat and drink. Tomorrow we may be dead. A Torah Jew? We remember our parents, our forebears, those that came before us, and we are concerned that there'll be young boys and young girls to take the torch and carry on the tradition. If Avraham Avinu becomes the first Jew, then he's the first Jew that has to bear a message. Today is not the most important. It is the father and mother of yesteryear and the boy and the girl of tomorrow. And this was my mother. This was Solanta. This was that entire era. A new beat to life. A new cadence to life. A new vision. A new understanding. We've come so distant from this. If you saw what's making the rounds today, publicity for the reform movement, they just filed with the Supreme Court here. Let's see how smart the Supreme Court will be in handling it. They want to be recognized as rabbis. The reform movement in America, have you seen the picture? They are now making bar mitzvahs and bat mitzvahs for canines. Have you seen the picture? With the dogs, with the yarmulke, with the talit, and with the female rabbi standing there, and the way she looks, even the Haredi press can publish her picture. It must be the heaviest rabbi in the world, 325 pounds worth. But this is frightening. This is This is Yiddishkeit. This is yesterday. This is tomorrow. This is concern. And my mother became part of it. Pirkei Avot, Perek Daled, Mishnah Aleph, Eizehu Chacham, Halomed Mikol Adam. And of course, this too, you come into Solanta. My mother got active in the ladies' auxiliary. They didn't call it a sisterhood yet. They used to, my mother would come, Bobby Esh, the chazanet, my minion at the Kotel, who went to Solanta during this period, yet remembers my mother coming to Solanta. They had a schedule. This woman came these 2 days. My mother came these 2 days. And they fed the students. The diet, potatoes, I wouldn't overstate that it was the best type of diet or the best type of schedule of food or menu of food, but nevertheless, potatoes, spaghetti, chocolate pudding, and you needed women, volunteers to give it out. But when you come, you meet the students, you meet other parents, you meet the immigrants who just came in, you meet the people running away from Hitler, you meet the Shanghai crowd. Ultimately, my mother became totally integrated with all the different winds that were blowing in Solanta, and she learned from it. She absorbed. She never stood still. She was always growing. She was always developing. She became part and parcel of the Solanta scene, of the Solanta crowd. And then there's a Meridic Mishnah in Pirkei Avot, a Mishnah that we should elaborate on endlessly, and a Mishnah that you should never forget. Perek Bet, Mishnah Tet in most editions. It's very hard when you quote Pirkei Avot, because every publication of Pirkei Avot and every Siddur gives you a different Seder, but it's in Perek Bet in the middle. And it's talking about Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. It's a very famous Mishnah, Maimon Chazal. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai is playing with his students. All of you know that part of being a Rebbe is the ability to play with your students. I need not go any further than quote my good friend Aaron Rakefitz's monumental work on the Rav, and the man who edited is sitting in front of me, volume 2, where Rebbe talks at a Sheva Brachas in the Holes of Home. He calls himself, I'm a pal of my students, and I'm one of the boys. I'm quoting the Rav, and he says, if you think you're better than your students, you cannot teach them anything. In order to teach, you have to be one of them. It's Meridic. You got to read the words. They're beautiful, beautiful. And a pal, what do you mean a pal? And Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai was playing with his students. Fellas, he said, what's the best trait that anyone should have? No, what's your answer? And everyone is giving a different answer. And Rabbi Eliezer says, Ayin Tova, a good eye. No, a good eye? What does it mean, a good eye? We're born with eyesight. Some of us have better eyesight. Some of us have less eyesight. You want to get into an elite unit in the army? 90% of this class could not be in an elite unit in the army. No, tell the boys why. What do you say? Matan. Their eyesight. We need glasses. Either we're wearing glasses or wearing contact lenses. That's it. The 3 most elite units in the army will not look at you if you're wearing glasses. No, Ayin Tova, we have a choice. So you look into the parish of the Maharal. The Maharal gives a fabulous interpretation. He says everything in life has good and bad in it. There's nothing in life that is purely good or purely bad. There's a pro, there's a con. It's up to the human being to stress the good. And this is a very important concept. We spoke about it yesterday and alluded to it. Our Harav Aaron Bina versus Aaron Rakefet. No, the world is shaking. That's what everyone is talking about. The article in the Jewish Week, what an article. I never saw so many words written on any topic. You might think he robbed the Chase Manhattan Bank. Wow, the testimony. Well, I told you what I think yesterday. But there's no question that these are different approaches. And I don't know who's right, who's the better machanach, but thank God, I am so proud that my wife often slaps my face and rebukes me, and she says, in 53 years of teaching, you have never said a bird word about any Talmud. I got that from my mother. My mother always saw the good. It's amazing. Whatever she did, wherever she was, she saw the good, the positive. And that's a fabulous trait. And I don't know. I'm in favor of chinuch. No one has to be frightened. I told you to go to Nativ Meir. Yeah, you have to know what you're getting into. If you can't take it, don't go there. There are plenty of other yeshiva on the map where they'll touch your head and pat your head and say you're a great guy, you're a wonderful guy, you're God's gift to mankind, God looked hadam, you'll learn Slabotka Musa. Nativ Ayeh is like Nevadik. If you can't take Nevadik, when I was a kid, 125 years ago, I had to make a decision whether to go to Slabatka or Nevadik. So I went to Slabatka. I was afraid to go to Nevadik. But after 2 years in Slabatka, I spent 6 months in Nevadik. And I benefit from it until today. But this trait of a good eye, looking to the Derech HaChaim, looking to the Maharal, this is so important. Later in life, in marriage, we have so much done. Divorce today, understand. And divorce is not just divorce. No, what's wrong with divorce? The Torah says you can get divorced. I've heard this. It's coming out of my ears. Sure, the Torah says you can get divorced. But what you're doing to your children, I have seen the products. I've been alive already 74 years. And I've taught, you know how many thousands of students, and I have seen the products when you get divorced, what you're doing to your kids, what you're doing to your grandchildren, what you're doing to future generations. Think a little. But of course, a world that's concerned only with, you're worried it wasn't, I'll get a little closer. No, it's okay. If not, you can make it louder. A world that's concerned with only today doesn't look ahead. Ah. A good eye, all right. There are problems in marriage. No one is perfect, and no people are perfectly matched. And whether a ketzer is right or wrong with the opposites marrying, and people say you have to be. I say opposites have to marry because that way your kids can never rebel. If they go to this side of life, they're like the mother. The other side, they're like the father. Where they're going to rebel, no matter which way they go, they're going to find the parent. But a good eye is crucial. And if you have a good eye, you will live longer, you will be happier, you'll be a better human being, you'll be a happier human being, you'll be able to say Kriyat Shema with better kavana. And if you're mad at a few Jews, so God, it's an amazing system. The Chachmei Chazal were so smart. Three times a day do I curse out all the enemies of Torah and all the evil people, in my opinion. Three times a day. You say the little passage and then you're finished. And I've often said, if Rakefet has too much kavanah, it's a sign the news is bad. That's all. But then you're finished, you leave it in God's hands. What, it's for me to smack another Jew? God have mercy. If Yigal Amir had any seichel, he would have davened with kavanah, l'ashin malchut tikva. Leave it to the Ribbono Shel Olam. Who are you to take God's will into your hands? And this is a good eye. And this I got from my mother. And I'll say something else about this ability to be friendly with everyone, to absorb, to be part. It was amazing. My mother was friendly with everyone. English was her native language. She spoke perfect Yiddish. Parents evidently spoke Yiddish to each other. I don't have to say evidently. I recall they spoke Yiddish to each other. She spoke perfect English, she spoke Yiddish. She could talk to the Rebbeim, the Shanghai crowd, in Mama Lashon. This is very important. She came to Israel, she learned basic Hebrew. I was amazed. She didn't come here a youngster. She came here, she was retired, she was in her mid-60s, And all right, then you can live in Israel for 120 years and not pick up one word of spoken Hebrew. I know people who are living here from time immemorial and they still can't hear the news in Hebrew. But you know, in Yerushalayim, I imagine in Tel Aviv, I imagine in Haifa as well, in Be'er Sheva, in any big city, there are enough Anglos that you can continue to speak in English, read in English, think in English. And I think, I may be mistaken, but I think there's even news on the radio in English. You can correct me if I'm wrong. I know when many years ago, I remember distinctly there were two English broadcasts a day on the radio. And my mother was friendly with everyone. We were in Bnei Akiva, our home was a meeting point. We were in Yeshiva, Rabbanim, our home was a meeting point. My brother was in medical school, my home was a meeting point. We were in the rabbinate. I remember at every shul dinner, my parents were there, and the balabatim and the rabbi's parents, and my parents. My mother more than my father, because she set the tone. She could be part of every scene. She could learn from everyone, and she always saw the good, the ayin tova. And I want to go further with the passage I quoted from Malachim, Malachim Bet, Perek Dalet, Pasuk Yud. So take a look. When the Shunamit, Nasena Aliyah Kiyak Tanan, Rasim Lashem, Mita, Shulchan, Kisei, Menorah, I don't know. Looks to me like the order is wrong. Person wakes up in the morning. Perhaps he needs a chair first. Needs a table. Needs a menorah. The last thing in life on a daily basis. He needs a bed. And here, if you take a look, the first thing that she prepared was a bed. The Mefarshim raised this question. The Dat Sofrim was Reb Chaim Rabinovich. I talked with him yet in Machon Gold. Make it a drop louder. I talked with him yet in Machon Gold and in BMT in the early years. And he was a Telzer from Europe who, tremendous religious Zionist who became a tremendous Bucky in Tanakh and wrote Sfarim, Dat Sofrim, very famous Sfarim, and he raises this very question. And he refers you to the Zohar. And I'll show you the Perush in a minute on the Zohar, but I want to explain the concept. It's extremely important. Why is the mitzvah so important? One of the basic needs of a human being is to feel he has a home. To use modern Hebrew, humushrash, shoresh, al yitzei ish bimkomo, to feel he is grounded. This is one of the basic needs of the human being. A human being that doesn't have this feeling, chas v'chalila, will have mental problems, emotional problems, disciplinary problems, but you have to have this feeling, I am grounded, I have a home. A mitah, what does a mitah represent? I see they must be playing with the electricity, but yet, now it's on. Yeah, it's on. What does a mitah represent? It represents that feeling, I've come home, I'm at ease, this is my place. And I'll show you in the Zohar, I'll show you a Perush in a minute. He makes an analogy to a traveler. You know, we go into your limb, not the Kollel, but the Torah Shranker in this building, they go into your limb. You travel you tour, you're on a speaking tour, you're visiting the states, you're checking whether you have a position for next year, and every night you're sleeping elsewhere. When you come home and you see your bed, you feel, ah, this is where I belong. I've arrived. I'm grounded. I have a home. I have roots. I'm at ease. This is why she put the bed first. She wanted Elisha to feel as difficult as traveling is, as difficult as moving from place to place, but here you're at home. You're at ease. And I'm quoting to you from the Zohar. I'm quoting from, there are many editions of the Zohar. I'm quoting from Sefer HaZohar, A Love Chone Peirush Matok Midvash, published in Yerushalayim in 1999. I'm quoting from, believe it or not, this week's Parsha B'Shalach, page Taf Fe Gimel in this edition. Taf Pe Gimel, Sefer HaZohar, Parshat B'Shalach, and the Perush Matot Midavash, the Zohar asks, Amai Atamim Mita, why is the bed put first? Begin the Hi Chaviva Alecha Yatir Mikula, that this is the most precious item that a human relates to. It's more important to him than anything else. And she mentioned what is more important than anything else first. And in the parish, Ki ika simchat horeachi im matzah makom menucha sheyachol lishon v'lanuach mitoreach haderech. And this is a magnificent parish. And I want to say about my mother, Kol HaKavod, she was totally rooted in the United States, born, bred, raised in Harlem, the Bronx, New York, and all that it represents. And in the middle of life, towards senior citizenship, picked up with my father, Zichronam Levracha, came in Aliyah, and my mother was totally rooted here. Came in 1977, so we're talking in terms of on to 31, 32 years, totally rooted, totally at ease, totally found the bed, totally found herself. Active, amit women. She was the receptionist for decades. When you called Amit, when you went to the office, when you came in, when it was on Rehov Al-Kalai, my mother greeted you. Sitting here today is my niece, married to my nephew. My nephew is a very prominent dental surgeon. He has receptionists who work for him. He would have them call my mother to see the way my mother answers the telephone and her mode of speech, to learn how to be a receptionist in his dental office. It was amazing to me. I was a little bit hesitant. After all, I grew up in the Bronx, but I left the Bronx at a relatively early age. I was in Pennsylvania, New Jersey. I went in Aliyah at the age of 31. I was young enough to shift gears. I was young enough to find a new bed. I was young enough to find Al Yitzayish bin Komo Yerushalayim Mir HaKodesh. But my mother and father came in Aliyah at a much older age. And Kol HaKavod to my mother, how she adopted here and adapted and adopted her situation. She volunteered in Hadassah. She volunteered in the AACI. She volunteered in Amit. Amit ultimately became her home. And let me share with you some personal memories on a lighter level. This I allude to in Washington. You think back what your mother, what you did with your mother, with all that she gave you. So one time, I must have been a kid of 11, she got tickets to a show, W-O-R it was called. I think it was called the Mutual Broadcasting Company. I may be wrong. And we got tickets to some show, these shows. There was no television yet, and you didn't have what you have today. My grandchildren sit in front of their computers, and they can download movies and television shows. Engle Dubber Sof, you come into Gris early in the morning, you'll find Torah Schrager kids hiding in rooms, watching a basketball game, a football game, 6:15 in the morning, and they're the happiest kids alive, you know. And I look at it, it's hard for me to comprehend this, that with on a little computer screen, they're watching the Super Bowl game. Okay, kala kavod, what a world. Why should I complain? I'm teaching now, and who knows how many are listening across the world. So we all are part of this new syndrome. So my mother got tickets to the show. We went to the show. Whatever the show was, I don't remember. It was an earth-shaking importance. It wasn't a Rashi and Tosfos or a Rambam and Rai. Maybe the show, whatever. Maybe the Long Ranger. Those were the popular shows. Then Sherlock Holmes. And then I'm coming out of the studio with my mother. We're walking down the steps. And coming out of another studio is Joe DiMaggio. I have to tell you that race is one of the greatest moments in my young life. And I shook hands. He was shy. You know, it was an amazing thing. I could tell a little kid, I got two autographs from him. One I kept, one I gave to Michael Hurwitz, who's a famous lawyer in Washington today. And there's no chance he's listening. I wish he would be for other reasons. And one autograph I kept, one I gave. And that's when I didn't want to wash my hands afterwards. You don't know what went on. This was the hand I shook Joe DiMaggio. How can you wash it? I took a bath. I held my hand up like that. It shouldn't become defiled after shaking hands with the jolting Joe DiMaggio. Another very fascinating, after World War II, when the kids were a little bigger, my mother went to work. This was already the start of the post-World War II boom, and women have to go to work, and the world is starting to change. My mother went to work. She was a fabulous secretary, a fabulous bookkeeper, a very good mind with numbers. And the place where she worked the longest, and until she became a school secretary and worked for the public school system, the place she worked the longest was a wholesale candy distributor, Roth, Mr. Erwin Roth and his wife, if I recall, Helen. And these were I remember where they lived, Loring Place in the West Bronx. And these were very good people with a lot of Jewish feeling. Of course, the observance was hit by America, but they had good neshamas. And two things I can tell you. One, I became an expert. I just read about Tzipi Livni's mother, Zichrona Livracha, that Tzipi Livni's mother used to go in the Shuk HaKamel in Tel Aviv and buy chocolate like I buy in Machne Yehuda. They're big chocolate stores. They buy up chocolate. Let's say the expiration date is March, so they can no longer sell. So they sell to Machne Yehuda 1 million bars of chocolate that will expire in 3 to 4 months. I can tell you that the chocolate is perfect. You can buy it, and even if it's a little white, all that means it hasn't been stored properly. Eat it with the white, nothing will harm you. And I read this article in Yudiyot about Tzipi Livni's mother, that she used to buy chocolate like this, and all the kids grew up knowing they could eat chocolate even if it's a little white. How did I learn this? Because Roth used to get back during the summer, if you didn't store the chocolate properly, it was very warm, it would start to turn white on top. So they would send it back and get a refund. What could he do with the chocolate? He refunded it. So he used to give it to my mother to take home for her kids. So I became a big expert in knowing that Hershey's chocolate, a little white, you scrub off the white, enjoy the chocolate, v'shalom al Yisrael. But now I'll tell you something that you won't forget. And you know what's amazing? I just called my brother in Las Vegas this morning, And he reminds me, I told him, Stevie, I can't believe what you're telling me. I'm going to mention this in class today. We also reminisced about the Roth and what good people they were. So Mrs. Roth, this is now your generation. She was ahead of the times. Your generation, everyone goes to a makubo. This is the latest thing. I don't know where it came from. People have already asked me, which makubo do I consult, or am I a makubo? I say, Baruch Hashem, I am a makubo, and I consult myself. What does a makubo mean? Kabbalat, oh, malchut shamayim. That's what it means. So I'm a makubo, Baruch Hashem. But you know what I'm talking about. There's so much news with the Mekubalim today and the scandals and how you become a Mekubal. And I love what was just said. Every 30-year-old guy with a long beard is a Mekubal. In the literature world today, you don't open your mouth until you're 75. I had to get a special heter to publish my book, Washington Avenue, because it came out when I was, it was published, I was 73 at the time. Now I'm 74. Gentlemen. Mrs. Roth used to go to the Lisker Rebbe. The Lisker Rebbe was right off the concourse. A Rebbe, a Friedlander in the Bronx, a long beard, black clothes, a mikveh in the building. I don't think he could learn too much, but that's a different story. But he was a Rebbe. There was another Lisker, his cousin in Williamsburg, who was more a bigger Lamdin, and he was very angry. The other one said, Lisker, he's the Lisker, but all right, that's Rebbe's shtick. But he had a following, the Lisker had a following. And I know that Mrs. Roth used to go to see him once a week. That was her psychologist, that was her therapist. She would go once a week, and she supported him, and she gave a Sefer Torah there, and she gave all the time stucker there. The Lisker. And I know one night a week you could not go. He did not have Kabbalat Kahal. If I'm not mistaken, it was on Wednesday night. Does anyone know why the Lisker Rebbe was shut down on Wednesday night? Because there was a big Cadillac parked. I used to walk up the hill where the Lisker lived, about 5 blocks from my house, closer to the Grand Concourse. And I used to see the Cadillac with the driver sitting there. And I would shake. Sometimes I'd try to stay around, but I had school the next day. I was a young kid. I couldn't stay up that late. Who would come out? Who went to see the Lisker? Every Wednesday, it saved his life and kept him going. And look how ignorant you are. How many of you know the greatest TV series ever recorded that even in a Haredi world like Meir Sharim, you can watch it? The Honeymooners. Who was the major star of The Honeymooners? No, who was Ralph Camden? Jackie Gleason. Jackie Gleason, a big, overweight Roman Catholic who was very unhappy with life, became a multi-millionaire playing the role of Ralph Camden. But he was unhappy. What could you do? He went to the Lisker every Wednesday night. The Lisker kept him alive. And that I learned from Mrs. Roth, from my mother, and I shall never forget it. So you remember your mother, you remember the little anecdotes, the major stories, that a mother is a mother. And let me go one step further. Chayei Sarah, there's an amazing ending. Vayivil Yitzchak Ho'ala Sarah Imo. This is Rivka has just gotten off the camel, fallen in love with Yitzchak Avinu, fell off the camel, and Yitzchak marries her and brings her into the tent of his mother Sarah. And Chazal tell us so beautifully, Kol zman shesara kayemet haya ne'er daluk me'erev Shabbat li'erev Shabbat, bracha mitzuyu bi'isa, v'yanan kashu al ha'oel, u'mishameta paska u'kishe ba'ata Rivka chazra. And of course, what Chazal are telling us, Seder. What Chazal are telling us, that Rivka, going back to the way we began an hour ago, Rivka took care of the spiritual, physical matters of the house. Sarah Imenu took care of the physical, spiritual matters. Everything was in their hands. Kol zman that Sarah was alive, there was a candle burning from Friday to Friday. Of course, that represents spirituality, the human being spirituality. Bracha Metzuya Be'isa, the physical greatness, the dough, the that which is temporal, was blessed, was beautiful, and the divine presence rested on the tent of Sarah and lay the tent of Rivka. And of course, this is a beautiful description of the woman who provides us with physical strength, spiritual greatness. These were the imahot of the Jewish people. I have to say about my mother, she had two marriages. When my father died so many years ago, 1980, a few years later she remarried a wonderful man, Rav Moshe Appelbach, Rav Moshe's son. One of his sons graduated Yeshiva College with me, David, another son I got smicha with 2 years later, so I knew the Appelbachs from my very young adulthood. But I can tell you my mother had two beautiful marriages. The first marriage to my father, the second marriage to Reb Moshe, who predeceased my mother. And you know what was amazing? Both these men did not know how to boil water for a cup of coffee. Both these men. It's a different generation. You can't even conceive of it. There's someone who works in this building every day, and I can tell you he doesn't know how to lift a finger, because every morning when I go in to make a cup of coffee and have a bite of breakfast about 7:15, he already has made a cup of tea, and he rips open the bag, throws it in the sink, and he leaves it there. And I won't tell him a word, because I know his wife, I'm sure, I know his origins. A man should throw away a bag from tea? A man should know what a garbage pail is? It's a disgrace, it's decadent, it's an infringement upon the godlet of the human masculine figure. And I can tell you, my mother, with all that she did, and she worked, and she was out of the house, her husband never learned how to boil water for coffee. She was the spiritual and temporal master of the house, and she gave it all that was necessary with love and with joy. And this too has to be cited. Let me go one step further. A lot was in the news recently about what happened. It's worthless, whatever they're doing. See if you can turn it off and I'll manage. Can't win in this world with all the technological advancement, and there are people here sitting who make a living out of technology. We still got a ways to go. No, leave it. We'll manage. With all that was in the news recently about the Horowitz family who are not in the hospital and the attention he did get. So I want to be makir toiva. I've said this many times. I want to say it in context now. One of the most meridik vetlach, fabulous concepts I heard from the Rav was on hakarat hatov. I told this to Tova, your father, the minute I said Hakarat Hatov, she told me the Vat. She knew right away what I was referring to. It's right in this week's Sedra. The Bach Yudin Pakuda, Chovot HaLevavot, says openly that the most important trait in Yiddishkeit is Hakarat Hatov. If we're not Makatoiva, we're not good Jews. We have to be Makatoiva to the Ribbono Shel Olam, we have to be Makatoiva to anyone who helps us, a Rebbe, a colleague, a wife, a child, etc. Hakarat HaTov. And how do we know this? The Rav said. And the Rav brought a very strong proof. He said Moshe Rabbeinu was willing to forfeit the whole Yitziat Mitzrayim because of Hakarat HaTov. Look in the Gemara in Sota, and you'll see the Sugya there, and the Jews are ready to leave. Pharaoh is finally telling them, get out. He's kicking them out. And Moshe Rabbeinu pauses, and he sends Serech Bat Asher, find the Aron of Yosef HaTzadik. We cannot leave Egypt without the Aron of Yosef HaTzadik. Why? This is Yosef HaTzadik who enabled us to survive the Egyptian diaspora. This is Yosef HaTzadik who fed and clothed us and sustained us during all the years of the Egyptian exile. This is Yosef HaTzadik who enabled the Shiftei Kut to survive. And we're going to leave Egypt without fulfilling our promise to take him out. And it's right in this week's Sugya at the start. When the Jews leave, who are they carrying with them? Yosef HaTzadik. And the time he sent Serach Bat Asher, the Rav said so beautifully, Paro could have changed his mind. Paro could have said stay. Paro could have done an about face. And Moshe Rabbeinu was willing to risk everything to show Hakarat HaTov to Yosef HaTzadik. And of course, Hakarat HaTov, we owe to our parents, we owe to our Rabbeim. But I want to express Hakarat HaTov on a different level. My mother was brought in, I brought her in to Shaarei Tzedek, must be about 2.5 months ago, 98 years of age, quite ill. I don't believe there are many hospitals outside of Israel where they would have treated her with such sincerity, with such will, with beyond the call of duty. My brother and I were flabbergasted. I'm not a doctor, but my brother, who has seen hospitals in the United States and elsewhere, my brother couldn't believe their attitude. It was not that my mother was 98 or that my mother was 18. I can tell you a story in Shaarei Tzedek that there was a certain procedure that was painful. And my daughters complained to my brother, and my brother told them not to do it. And a day or two later, I'm there. My mother is doing a little better. And the doctors come to me and say, you must. They knew already that I would not make any medical decisions. I would only say, you have to ask my brother. They said, you must call your brother. He was teaching then in medical school. They said, you must call your brother and plead with him to let us do this procedure because your mother's doing a little better now and we don't want to lose her. And I couldn't believe my ears. And I called my brother. He saw what I was calling. He answered. And he told me, all right, if they're begging you, let them do it. I mean, where do you see an attitude like this? 98 years old. And when we brought her to Herzog afterwards, when they did all they could do in Shaarei Tzedek, and she was in Herzog already, what you would call a hospice. It's called Siyudim Murkav. I have to tell you, the attitude of the staff was everything they could do. They didn't waste a minute. And they showed me the list, because my brother had told them, her eyes, there was a little infection here, put in drops. So my brother said, check when you're there tomorrow that they're putting the drops in. I mentioned it to her. She shows me the list. She says, we have to check off each thing as we do it. There it says, Tipoteinayim. Not only that, I'll tell you a story, Bididi Haviyavda, that after they did something for my mother in Herzog, I said to the nurse, Ani modelach ma'od. You know, you have to be a mensch, Hakarat HaTov, I thank you. She said, no, ata lo tzarich lodot lanu. Zeh ha-tafkid shalanu, zeh ha-yayud shalanu, zeh ha-adgah shalanu. I couldn't believe the words and the smile on her face. And when all is said and done, there has to be tremendous Hakarat HaTov to Shaarei Tzedek and to Herzog. And I understand in Yerushalayim that this is the norm in the hospitals. This is what I've been told by others, that they're very caring and they try their best and they don't look at the age. And I don't have to tell you what's going on in America today. If you're familiar with Obama and the health reform and Agudat Yisrael and what they're getting involved with and what went on in Canada when an 82-year-old religious man was rushed to the hospital and they refused to do anything, they had to go to court. It was beyond words. I think it ultimately reached the Supreme Court in Canada. They had to give a decision that the hospital should treat the man even though he's 82 years of age. So, to summarize, yes, I had a mother for 90, reached the age of 98. I need not say that that's a great consolation. I need not tell you that the fact that she died with 48 great-grandchildren, 2.5 great-grandchildren, a fifth generation, she was aware that I'm expecting a second great-grandchild shortly. It's a great source of consolation. I can tell you that the stretcher was carried only by great-grandsons. And to see that sight was very moving and very consoling. But nevertheless, 74 years I had a mother, bi'evrit meduberet, hitragalti le'ima, and I have no one to call me Ani every morning, which is perhaps for me personally the greatest loss of all. So I want to reiterate the Divrei Torah goes beyond the Hesped. The Shunamit was a very intelligent woman. A lot is happening today. The role of the woman, I got the compliment in the Weekend Post, and I have to tell you again that everyone believes the authoress, or the author, I should say, don't use authoress anymore, was my student. I don't recall ever meeting Atara Beck. As far as I know, I don't know what her maiden name was, but as far as I know, she was not my student. I've never had a review with 7 books in print. I've never been privileged to such a wonderful, positive, insightful review. And in part of the review, she discusses very briefly my attitude towards the fairer sex. I can tell you the world is shifting today. We all struggle with it. I lectured on feminism for 1 full year. But the world in which my mother grew up was the world of the Shunamit, was the world of the Isha Gedola. And they ran the homes. They were the backbone, the physical, the spiritual, fathers, they were the Sarei HaChutz. Outside of the house, they got the Aliyah, they made the Mishabeirach, they went to work, they brought home a paycheck. In my time, the mothers took the paycheck to the bank, not the fathers. I don't think my father knew how to write a check. I'm pretty certain he did not know how to write a check. My mother. And one little decision. You talk about Ezehu Chacham Haro'et HaNolad, one little decision. Send the boy to Solanta. Look how that affected eternity. All of us involved at the time, my mother, my father, the children, my younger brother who had come along in 46, and take a look, the Habatzah Torah, the ability to interpret, the ability to blend the generations, the ability to put together Shankai and Joe DiMaggio and the Kotel HaMaravi, all came out of that decision to send little Ani to Yeshiva Solanta. It's more than that, of course. I admire my mother because of her character traits. The ability to always see good, that's an overwhelming trait, that's an important trait. I know many people who don't have that trait. I know some people who have an eye and say everything is negative. I know some people struggle half and half. But I know happy people, I'd rather call a shot wrong and call a gangster a tzaddik than call a tzaddik a gangster, okay? I'd rather be on the side of the gangster being called a tzaddik than vice versa. And that I got out of my mother. And then, of course, I have to pay credit to my mother, mushrash, very important word, to feel rooted, to feel this is your place, to feel it's your home, to feel I can function here. And all the credit in the world, the Zohar, the Mitah, why is the Mitah so important? That commentary that the Dat Sofim quotes, what insight. And that Perish on the Zohar. And it's so true, because I know when I travel and I get back to my own bed, I slept on better beds. I was in more beautiful surroundings. I was in wealthier areas. But this is my bed. This is my home. And how my mother was able to come in Aliyah in 1977 and become a personality here in her own light. So much so that Amit women wanted me to give this hesped on Amit today instead of giving it here. And kol hakavod to Amit, that dear makor tova. I also mentioned the famous Medrash Rabbah that Rashi quotes, Sarah and Rivka. Once again, it's the spiritual and the physical. The woman makes the house. Where I come from, I would have led a campaign to give men more credit. I don't have any problems with feminism, because where I come from, the women were the ones who set the tone. And my mother had two marriages, and it's overwhelming. Men who did not know how to write checks, men who did not know how to boil water, and men who were, her second husband was a world-famous class lawyer. He was president of the Shomer Shabbos Association in Borough Park. You have no idea what that means. I spoke with Rabbi Fetter, Zichrono Livracha. He was the rabbi. He was the president. They used to go from store to store on 13th Avenue pleading with them to close on Shabbos. Today, none of you can understand what I just said. But they used to go from store to store, pleading with them to close on Shabbos. And Mara's Sefer Tzadik Livracha, when all is said and done, didn't know how to boil a cup of water. And that was the generation. And my mother had absolutely no problem with it. If anything, it was fulfillment for her. In her feminine role, it was total fulfillment of the feminine mystique. And finally, I said words of Hakarat HaTov to, first of all, Divrei Torah for my Rebbe, which ties everything together, Mori Rebbe, Rav Soloveitchik, and Hakarat HaTov, and Sharei Tzedek, and Herzog. I, for one, didn't need an Ayin Tova to see all the good they did. Just watching and being part, and we walked in unknown. I resent people who say to me, no, then who was a Rafa Kessler, Dr. Rothkopf? No one knew me. My brother was a doctor here in the middle of the country, in Tel HaShomer, in Ladiano, in Asuta. There, my brother was a big shot. Here, he was just another name. All right, afterwards, they got to know us. It's true, some of the doctors did know me, but that was only afterwards. But when they welcomed her, it was B'lev Rachav, B'nefesh Chafetza. It was a sight to see their dedication. The nurses, the doctors, the Shoyet Lumi girls, we were Ashrei Ayin Rat Hazot. We have a lot to be proud for in the state of Israel. Min HaShemayim Zikuni. Some of you know, years ago I made a Siyum Shas. And in a few minutes, all that will stand between me and the next Siyum Shas is a Masechet called Masechet Nida. It's not the easiest of Masechetot, but Be'ezrat Hashem, we will get there. I learn at, I have my own pace, there's nothing to do with a Daf Yomi, but I do force myself to learn a certain amount every day. On Shabbos, I had just started Shiluach HaKain, it should be, we used to say in the yeshiva world, Shiluach HaKan. But you'll forgive me, in modern Hebrew. By the way, this picture is a picture of five generations. It's my mother, yours truly, my daughter who's sitting here, her son, my grandson, her granddaughter, her grandson, who's my great-grandson, who's my mother's great-great-grandson. Here he's a little boy. Today already he's a lot older and smarter, and he'll tell you off, Baruch Hashem. Kids grow up very quickly. Baruch HaTov Adonai Melech Olam
Shekoni Medvro.
Yeah. Can you
people avoid the ladies' gender allowed to speak up in this building?
Are people allowed to what?
Am I allowed to speak up? I want to say something about your mother that I never shared with everybody in this room.
You have 2 minutes to say, because I have to finish. They have to go to class afterwards. I have to finish by 10. Yeah, absolutely. But 2 minutes. You're limited.
32 or 33. Sabarit was born here in a hospital in Jerusalem. I here, of course, came here 44 years. And my daughter was born 10 weeks prematurely. Not 2 weeks, not 4 weeks, 10 weeks.
Right.
2.5 months. And I went to my daughter back and forth. She was, of course, in intensive care in a major hospital in the city. I went back and forth day and night and by buses from Gilo to the other side of the city. I was spending all my time commuting, and I'd just given birth. Min Shamayim, one day I'm going to the hospital. I went every day. I didn't travel on Shabbat. I wanted your mother. And your mother was in her 60s. She jumps on me, and my daughter's name is Bracha, and I've seen your mother maybe 4 or 5 times in my life. I just met her a few years before that. She jumps on me and goes to me, Sue, Bracha gained 90 grams since yesterday.
Wow.
What are you talking about? What do you mean? How do you know she gained 90 grams in one day? She told me, Sue, I'm a candy scraper. For those who don't know what a candy scraper is, the volunteers in the hospitals who would be wearing pink and white stripes like your shirt, with the apron or the whatever, she said, I'm a candy scraper. I'm at this hospital two or three days a week. I always go in to visit your daughter, and people know, and I'm not a grandmother of hers, and I'm not a great-grandmother, and they just know I'm a family friend, and I'm monitoring her weight.
Wow, wow.
I'm monitoring her weight. And I think, and she said, like, this business of getting 90 grams in one day, which is almost half of a bar of margarine.
Right.
I think that was my daughter's greatest gain on any one day in the whole 2.5 months.
Well,
but your mother broke it to me, and she hugged me and kissed me. If I were to come into the hospital 3 minutes later, or she would have left 3 minutes earlier, I never would have known that she was a volunteer. But just her popping in 3 times a week, and not a grandmother of the child, and not a great grandmother, and just her presence and her uniform, and she had a name tag.
Thank you.
Believe me, it added to my daughter's care.
Thank you. Is that your daughter whom I taught later?
For your mother.
Amen. Is that the daughter I taught afterwards? I taught your daughter in Midrash.
My daughter was CP, Cerebral
Palsy. Right, that's Bracha, right?
Bracha.
Okay, so it all ties together.
I forgot, thanks for reminding me. Rabbi Rakepet was her teacher.
I taught her in
the... Program at
Shaw Rate
Center.
Right, right.
My daughter came in a wheelchair.
Right.
She's perfectly intelligent, Baruch Hashem. You told me years later, my daughter was 18 or 19, but the only Sabra in the class, all the other girls were 18 or 19, and they were from America.
Right.
And my daughter probably spoke with you in Hebrew.
Right, well.
You told me years later, which is your Hakkavatatel, my Hakkavatatel to you, that my daughter asked the most insightful question once a week, and my daughter's question once a week kept the class going.
Baruch Hashem. God should give strength, and you should only have nachat, and thank you for the kind words. Thank you for the kind words. I just want to end off. So I started Shiluach Hakan, I should say in modern Hebrew, but the Rav said Shiluach Hakan. It's hard for me to correct myself. And I take a look. It's a small perek. I didn't realize it. The other perekim and chul, and each perek can put you under. So Baruch Hashem, I'm now going to make a siyum and tie it into my mother and say something I haven't said. The final Mishnah in Chulin, Lo Yitaladam Eim Al Banim, Afil Taher Et Hamitzora. And you're not allowed to take the mother, you know, Shalach V'Shaleach HaTaim, you cannot take the mother, it is forbidden. What about to take the mother of the little doves, to take her, because you need a sacrifice, you need a korban. It's a mitzora. He has to bring a korban, and he wants to use this bird. So you might say, look, take the bird. What's wrong? Take the bird. It's a small matter. And nevertheless, the Torah tells you, under no condition are you to take the bird. And umay mitzvah kala shehiki isar. And this is such a cheap mitzvah. You're sending away the bird. How much is a dove worth? A few pennies. It's not an expensive animal. You can buy it before Pesach. Before Yom Kippur. You can buy birds in the shuk. They slaughter birds one after another. A little dove is 1/10 the size of a chicken. It's worth a nisar. It's like a penny, a small coin. And nevertheless, you're not allowed to take the bird, and for this mitzvah, you get tremendous reward. Shalach the shalech ha'taim, and you send the mother away before you take the little children, you get tremendous reward. You have long life on the land that God will give you. And the Mishnah says, Uman mitzvah kale, shehi ki'isa, amre Torah l'man, yitav lach ma'arech te'yamim, kal v'choma al mitzvot chamurot shebetorah. So if for such a small mitzvah, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to give you such a reward, so it's the technical word is it's a 40 ori. If you have a better word, tell it to me. But that's the word Sansino uses. It's a kal v'choma, alach at kama v'kama, certainly, for a bigger mitzvah, you're going to get a fabulous reward. Now, the Gemara then goes on to raise the problem of theodicy. Tzadik v'ralo, Rasha v'tovlo. Tanya Devei Rabbi Yaakov says that when you talk about l'man yirichin yamechal adama, it means that the world to come. Because in this world, it will never work out. And the Gemara tells the story, and this is a famous story, it's a Yerushalmi as well, I don't want to go into all the details here with Elisha ben Avuya, but imagine a father says to his son, my boy, climb up on the ladder and send away the mother. Okay, there's an angel that's it, al habanim, I want to take the little chickens, I want to eat them, I want to slaughter them, send the mother away. The kid climbs up on the ladder, sends the mother away, so he's makayim the only two mitzvot in the Torah where it says, L'man yirichu yomecha, kibur aviyim, and shiluach hakein. Right? It's makayim two mitzvot at once. And coming down the ladder, the boy falls, breaks his neck, and dies. And Rabbi Yaakov says, we can't understand this. This can only mean that there's a world to come, that there's life after death, that's where the ultimate reward will be. So the Gemara ends off, Omer Rav Yosef, Ila Mole Dosha Acher, Acher is Elisha ben Avuya, and the story is told in Yerushalmi that he actually saw this happen. He saw a father telling a kid, go up and send away the mother, and the kid went up the ladder, was Mekayim Shiluach HaKein, came down the ladder, fell down and died. And that's when Acher became an apikoros. And you can make the analogy to the Holocaust. So many Jews, endless stories with the Holocaust, who they want to have nothing to do with God, and many stories that I know personally, and you can never argue with them, I don't have to tell you. Ultimately, many of them came back due to their wives, by the way. Women have more cycle. It's the famous story of a nation apart or a people apart, that documentary that won so many awards in 1999. And the star of the documentary, who's no longer alive, but when he came out of the camps, he said, I want to have nothing to do with God, nothing to do with religion. He married another survivor. And she said to him, what are we going to raise children who are goyim? And he went along with his wife. And, all right, let the home be kosher. Let's have a little Shabbat. And ultimately, of course, his kids went to YU, became Baba V'Chassidim, and it's a fabulous movie. So Elisha lost it. Elisha ben Avuya becomes Acher. Amar Rav Yosef, Ilam Malei Dasha Acher Lahai Krak Rabbi Yaakov. If he would have understood what Rabbi Yaakov said about the world to come, Lo Chata, he would have never sinned. My chaza, what did he see? Ikidiamre ki hai maisa chaza, that he saw this happening, that a kid went up on the ladder and fell down and died, even though he was doing two tremendous mitzvot. The ikidiamre, lishna de rabbi chutzpit hamaturgimim chaza, he saw one of the 10 haruge malchut, he saw his tongue lying on the floor, the habi mutalit ba'ashpar in the dung heap. A mouth that said so much different Torah should drop in the dust. Imagine what we saw, the 6 million Gedolei Gedolei Yisrael. For who are you dying? He didn't understand. L'man yitav lach be'olam shekula tov, u'l'man yericha yamecha be'olam shekula waroth, meaning olam haba. And that's the way the Masechet ends. So I want to tell you one more thing about my mother that not many people know. There was no greater example of Kibbutz Aviyim than my mother. When my grandmother, Mitzad, my father, died in 1938, she left her husband, my Gzeder, Moshe Zev, who took me to shul every Shabbos. never Americanized, never spoke a word of English, worked in Pechter's bakery, worked at night, didn't work by day, slept by day. His whole life was so completely different and difficult. And my mother took him into her home, and we were poor people with a little apartment. You don't know how well you live compared to the way we grew up. And in one bedroom, I slept with my brother, my two brothers, and my grandfather. For the next 20 years, my mother had them up to get him kivud avim of the highest order. And we were zeicha. We don't need this gemara for my mother. My mother was zeicha b'olam hazeh, la'aricha jemim tovim, and I'm positive, gam ba'olam ha'emet. Hadran alach mesechet chulin v'hadrach alan, the daitan alach mesechet chulin v'daitach alan, lo nishashi minech mesechet chulin v'otis nashi minan, lo ba'alma chedein v'lo ba'alma diati. Hadran alach mesechet chulin v'hadrach alan, Daitach alan, mesechet chulin, v'daitach alan, lo nishashi minech, mesechet chulin, v'lo tish nashi minan, lo b'omachadein, v'omadiyati. Hadran alach, mesechet chulin, v'adrach alan, daitach alach, mesechet chulin, v'daitach alan, lo nishashi minech, mesechet chulin, v'lo tish nashi minan, lo b'omachadein, v'omadiyati. V'tzomu v'fenech, Adonai lachinu, v'leha v'teinu, sh'etechei toratcha, emunateinu b'olam hazeh, v'tei manu l'olam haba, chanina b'pap, Rami Bapapa, Nachman Bapapa, Chai Bapapa, Abamori Bapapa, Rafram Bapapa, Rachish Bapapa, Solchab Bapapa, Ada Bapapa, Dori Bapapa, Harev Nadan Elohein with the Retorat Chabifin with Fifiotam Chabet Yisrael, Vinia Kulanu, Anachman would say it, Sain would say it, Say Am Chabet Yisrael, Kulanu Yadei Shemech Valam Yitaratecha, Mayavaita Chachmeni Mitzvatecha, Kirelem Hili, Hili Bitamim Bukacha Laman Loebosh, Leolem Loesh Kach Pukudecha, Kivam Hechiatani, Baruch ata Adonai lamdeni chukecha, amen, 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 selava ed. Modim anachnu lefanecha Adonai Eloheinu v'lehi avoteinu, shesamta chalkeinu miyoshvei beit hamedrash, v'lo samta chalkeinu miyoshvei kranat, shonu mashkimim v'chein mashkimim, anu mashkimim l'divrei Torah, v'chein mashkimim l'dvarim b'teilim, anu amelim v'chein amelim, anu amelim mekabelim scha, v'chein amelim enim mekabelim scha, anu ratzim v'chein ratzim, anu ratzim l'chai olam haba, v'chein ratzim l'veshachat, shenema, Vata Elohim Torudem Leve Shachat Anshei Damim Umirma Lo Yechetsu Yemechem V'ani Yetav Bach Yehir Etzom Bufenecha Adonai Elohai Kishen Azatani Letzai Melechet Chulin Ken Tazven Elapshil Mesechtot Usfar Machedim Letzai Mamdu Modu Lelameid Lishma Velasot Ulekayem Et Kol Devrei Palme Toretach B'yava Uzchut Kol Hatanayim V'morayim V'tamidei Chachamim Tamod Li Ulezari Shelo Tamush Hatorim Mipi Mipi Zari V'zer Zari Adolom יתקיים בי והתחלכתך תנחה אותך ושחבקה תשמע לך והקיצותה היא תשיחך כי בי ירבו ימיך ויפו לך שנות חיים אורך ימים בימין ובצמאל ושב וכבוד אדוני עוז למו ייתן אדוני יברך את עמו בשלום יתגדל ויתקדש שמי רבה בימה דרכו עתיד להתחדתה לאחייה מתי ולעסק היתון לחיי עומה ולמבנה קטה דירושלם ולשכללה היכלה בגבה ולמרקה פולחנן וכרעה מנהרה ולעתה בפולחנה דשמיה להתראי וימלך קודשה בריחו במלכותי ויקרי בחייכון וימייכון וחיי דחוב בית ישראל בגלה ובזמן קריב ימרו אמן ויחי שמי רב המבורך ליום ליומי יום היום יתברך וישתבח ויתפעה ויתרמם ויתנשא ויתדע ויתעלה ויתעלל שמי דקודשו בריחו ואילו מכל בכתב ושירתה תשבחתה ונחמתה דאמרים ביומה ואמרו אמן על ישראל ועל רבנו ועל תמידי הון ועל כל תמידי תמידיהן ועל כל מנדי אוסקים ויוראית דיביאטר קדישה דנגי לכל עתה ויתה יהי להון ולכון שלום רב חינו וכסתו ורחמים וחי נריכן ומזון הרוויחה ופנקונו מקודם אבוים די ושמיה וימרו אמן יהי שלום רב מן שמיה וחי עלינו ועל כל ישראל וימרו אמן עושה שלום במרום אפוי עשה שלום עלינו ועל כל ישראל וימרו אמן בעזרת השם next Sunday we pick up with Rav Ovadia Yosef and next Monday at long last Das Teda, or Da'at Torah, whichever way you pronounce it. Thank you very, very much.